Hi, everyone. It's Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice. And here's one I think you'll enjoy. It's called On Hard Times and Waiting for Santa, a whimsical entreaty from Kevin Annett. Well, some years ago, over a glass of his favorite bourbon, my dad reminded me why, as a youngster, I kept believing in Santa Claus. In these struggling days when our campaign's fiscal gas tank is nearing empty, I think it's especially an appropriate yarn. It was a week before Christmas in the year 1963. JFK had just been whacked, although the event made little impression on my seven-year-old mind, except when one of my grade two colleagues was sent to stand in the hallway when he responded to the teacher's query, "What begins with O?" with a cheeky, "Oswald." On the Anna household front, my mother was engaged in her usual pre-Yuletide shopping hysteria, goaded on by my dad's tendency to display a general indifference to buying a lot of shit, caused by the fact that he was usually broke. To make Planet Annett even more interesting, one cold Winnipeg morning, I apparently raced into the house in a state of angst after I'd chatted with our neighbor's kid, Andrea Ginsburg. With your standard Jewish chutzpah, Andrea had informed me with the certainty of one of the chosen people that, "No, Kevin, you schmuck, there really is no Santa Claus. It's your parents who give you all those gifts." As was my wont, I immediately went to my older brother Bill for clarity and solace. Well, ever the born operator, Bill's just retired from the corporate world with loads of ill-gotten lucre, he replied without batting an eye, "Aw, oh, come on, Kev. Of course it's Santa who gives us presents. You know Dad could never afford to buy all that stuff." Well, that made perfect sense to me, of course. And so I kept the faith for another few years. Well, belief in a savior, whether he's bestowed with a beard and a sack of goodies or not, is an occupational illness of people under fire. Once we get clobbered enough and the waves of oblivion lap over us, we naturally look to something or someone else who will pull us out before we go under for the third time. Or a bit further down the maturation road, we learn to find a way out for ourselves. Well, there is, of course, a third option. We can help each other out of the turbulence. In an atomized and narcissistic culture like ours, the latter choice is easier said than done. Regardless of their politics or spirituality, North Americans don't think in terms of we, but rather me. For instance, just this past week, a supporter of our Republic of Canada demanded why I hadn't shown up in her community and given the common law workshop that I'd promised to do. "Because I'm broke," I answered. "Well, then just meditate and manifest the money," she snapped glibly. "Well, how about you folks just help raise the funds for my travel?" I responded. The woman said nothing. My lifelong tendency to never ask for help and to refuse payment for doing what's right certainly hasn't helped me stay afloat materially. I've never copyrighted anything I write or produce, and I routinely give away my books and even my paltry funds to those who need them. Most people enable that tendency in me by assuming that Kev will do it. He can do anything. He brought down the Pope. He's our hero. Well, folks, the arrangement is far from realistic. Facts are stubborn things, and the fact is that the enormous freedom movement I've helped to create is falling far short of its goals because of a lack of sustaining income. Our work lives completely hand-to-mouth, the way I do. But now with 2020 approaching and new campaigns being planned on many fronts, very exciting campaigns, we need to raise a minimal operating fund if our common law republic and child protection movement is to find wings again. The targeted amount of that fund is $50,000. With those funds, here's what we'll do. We'll commence a documentary film project that details on the ground the ongoing genocide in Canada as a sequel to award-winning film Unrepentant. Also, we'll continue the work of the West Coast Tribunal into Canadian war crimes, which has documented and linked the Trudeau government with Chinese organ and child traffickers. We'll commence a cross-continent organizing tour by me in the new year to build common law people's assemblies in more than 24 communities. We'll continue to help establish the Republic of Canada in local Canadian communities, and we'll train Republic sheriffs to arrest and bring to trial, to common law trial, the traffickers and killers of children. Well, whether any of that happens depends on you. I've been under a total blacklisting for over 2 decades. Our successes have been thanks to the support from people like you. Your consistent financial backing is now all the more crucial. Online fundraising systems that we've relied on, like Patreon and GoFundMe, have continued denied access to the pledges made to our movement, and then they fog their fraudulent criminality. We just can't access the funds. The sabotaging hand of the corporate state reaches far. So, here's how all of you can help Kev keep believing in Santa Claus. First of all, send us a check, or a bunch of them, post-dated. Make them out to William Annett. Yep, that's my dad. And mail them to him at 1823 Ridgewood Avenue, apartment 207, Holly Hill, Florida, USA, 32117. That's William Annett, A-N-N-E-T-T, at 1823 Ridgewood Avenue, apartment 207, Holly Hill, Florida, 32117. If you're lazy, you can send your donations to us through PayPal to the email pickwick88@yahoo.com. You can find that listed under donations at murderbydecree.com. And if you really love me and want to arrange a bigger donation, contact me directly at thecommonland@gmail.com or hiddenfromhistory1@gmail.com. And we can arrange a direct bank wire transfer, or we can arrange to have the cash dropped off in the middle of the night in a musty garage somewhere. And by the way, any one of you who pledges $100 or more to our movement will receive a signed copy of any two of my books found at Amazon.com or listed in my emails. Plus, you get a free dinner at the Bonanza All-You-Can-Eat restaurant in Winnipeg. Okay. I was just kidding about that last bit. I trust in the power of truth and in the goodwill of all of you. But I have to admit that some part of me is holding out for a really big Santa Claus this year to come through. Like the guy from Texas who every month or so assures me that once the global financial reset happens, he's sending our work a cool $150,000. Of course, he started promising me that nearly 8 years ago. So as with the second coming, I ain't holding my breath. And so, dear Santa, in your many ordinary guises, help us save lives and recover our liberties. Pledge what you can consistently and make possible our goal of $50,000. So with my thanks and Yuletide cheer, this is Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice, murderbydecree.com. And as a P.S., just for the record, I don't hold any childhood grudge against my dad for being broke back then. But his bad jokes still bug me. Bye for now. Well, here we are once more, the University of British Columbia, where I actually grew up. I moved here when I was 12, over 50 years ago. I got 3 of my university degrees here, and if I had been a good boy and not going into certain areas, I would have been lauded and applauded by now, and not a pariah in my own culture. But the academic environment out here is so strange, you know, the way they can shut somebody out totally, legally, and everyone just turns a blind eye, while at the same time thinking they're nice, liberal, progressive Canadians. It's very strange. I'll give you an example. After I uncover that evidence in Kerner Library of the 50% death rate in residential schools, and I tried to share that with people in my department, and they all turned away with a frown on their face. I found even more stuff, which indicated there are actual quotes from Dr. Peter Bryce, the government medical inspector in Western Indian residential schools, who said, quote, "I believe the conditions are being deliberately created to spread infectious disease." That was in 1907, 50% death rate for another 40 years. Evidence? No. People just didn't want to hear it. But what was interesting, the guy in the department who made sure I got scuttled, my degree got scuttled, his name was Murray Elliott. He was a United Church official. He was actually, at the very moment I was in the department, he was sitting on the church committee that was deciding whether I should retain my status as a minister or not. He helped arrange the defrocking, the kangaroo court that threw me out. And he was also deciding whether I should get academic funding for my thesis on Indian residential schools and the complicity of the United Church. Conflict of interest? Not according to the University of British Columbia, who, after he had forced me out and made sure I didn't get any funding, despite my first grade average, first time in the department that had ever happened, they said, no, he wasn't in a conflict of interest, even though he's with the church that I was criticizing. No. So anyway, It turned out all right, not from a professional point of view for me, but in terms of getting the information out, because if, instead of sitting in a dusty shelf somewhere, my PhD thesis became the basis of Hidden from History, the Canadian Holocaust, and then a lot of my other work and research. So it got out there. It was the hidden hand work. But the way he did it was so efficient, you know. Just slam dunk. He used to go around the department telling grad students that I had a mental problem, I had problems with my wife. This is a professor talking about a grad student. No one objected. No one thought that was a problem. It shows you how effectively it works. And even 7 years later, I was still shut out at UBC. I was invited by Richard Fredericks, a sociology professor here, to come and speak on my research. I was arranged to give 5 lectures. This is February 2003. And after one lecture, Richard kind of sheepishly explained that I couldn't come back. And he didn't explain till about 2 months later what had happened. He had been spoken to by David Pocatello, the head of the sociology department, who actually knew me. I took some anthro courses from him when I was younger. We were friends at one point. Anyway, David Pocatello says to Richard, Kevin is not to be invited back. His book on residential schools is to be removed from your curriculum on crimes against humanity. And you're on suspension. He didn't give a reason why. Eventually, Richard was forced out of the department, had to go teach in Malaspina College in Nanaimo. So he got blacklisted for the crime of having me in. But it shows you how effectively it works. You know, I shared that anecdote about how effectively it is, so easy it is to shut out somebody in the academic world in Canada. And I circulated it to the Canadian Association of University Teachers and other academics. They said, we can't believe that would happen in Canada, even though I had all the proof and evidence. So it shows you why the censorship carries on. You know, the academic world, like the media, is just completely controlled. Certain issues, you don't exist. If you advocate certain issues, you don't exist. The issue doesn't exist. Nevertheless, the truth persists, and I'm still out here digging into all this stuff. Glad to be here, still alive after 50 years on the campus. Even though the bullshit continues, so does the opposition, so does the truth.
Hello and good evening, everybody. I'm Dr. Catherine Horton, and here with me today is Kevin Annett, and he has some pretty impressive news that he will talk about. Oops, sorry. I have to do a sound check in the background. Forgive me, because they were hacking my devices quite a bit recently. Sounds good. Okay, it sounds like you guys can hear me okay. What I would like to do today is I would like to dive straight in. So I'm going to pass the microphone to Kevin Annett, and he can update you about everything that is happening. Pretty, pretty big news. So hello, Kevin. How are you doing?
Hi, Catherine. I'm great, and it's really good to be back again.
So tell us, what has been going on? Because your news impressed me quite a bit. So,
well, the big news is, as folks may or may not know, there's going to be a federal election in Canada on or before October 21st. And this election is happening in the context that the Prime Minister and 20 other high officials of church and state have already been summoned to appear before a war crimes tribunal that we're sponsoring in Vancouver. They're also falling in the polls. It looks like the Tories are going to throw them out. So they're very defensive, the government right now. So a lot of us thought it was a good time for me to throw my hat in the ring. And so I officially declared my candidacy in the election, running under the banner of a party that was formed in 2015, the Republican Party of Canada, which stands on the basic principle of acting on a majority mandate. 58% of Canadians in a poll 3 years ago said they want an end to all ties with the monarchy. They want a republic, self-governing republic. So we're acting on that mandate, and I'll be running on that program. Now, to put that in the context of why it's so important right now, if folks go to our website, murderbydecree.com, and then under ITCCS updates, you'll see the 3 most recent postings refer not only to me running the election, but part of what led to that, you'll see an article, Arrest This Canadian War Criminal, and Canadian Senator Larry Campbell is summoned to appear before a tribunal. This is what we've uncovered is the fact that a top senator in Canada is directly linked to the murder, torture, and disappearance of Aboriginal women. This is from eyewitnesses. His partner in crime, the retiring Anglican primate for Canada, Fred Hills, he was also summoned to appear at this tribunal because recently there was an Anglican synod in Vancouver that coincided with, and there was no coincidence involved, it occurred right at the same time as the Ninth Circle ceremony on July 16th in Vancouver. at which a lot of people from around the world came and participated in the killing of at least two children. And on midnight on July 16th, which was a full moon and a semi-eclipse. So it was, you know, all of this stuff coming together. We realize now is the time to take this to a higher level and to say to Canadians, under international law, this proven criminal regime does not have the right to operate anymore. We need to run on a program of replacing the Crown of England and its authority. It has no authority under international law. It's a rogue power like the Vatican. And so we've got to be more forceful, public, and political about this. So that's part of why I'm running in the election.
This is absolutely amazing. And I guess for those new, so there's always a new batch of viewers that are listening. I mean, you know, by now the seasoned viewers know exactly what you're talking about. But, you know, just so that people have an easier time taking it in and understanding what you're saying, you were saying that on the 16th of July, a satanic ritual actually did take place whereby you have confirmed reports that two children were murdered. Is that right?
That's right. Now, the Ninth Circle is a cult within the Catholic Church and the Anglican Church. It's been around for at least 300 years. There's been references made to it in Vatican documents, insiders, set up by the Jesuits, used as a way to control people. Popes and top cardinals are all expected to take part in these rituals. If you go to our site, you'll see numerous interviews with survivors, two women in particular in Europe, who took part in these ceremonies. And, you know, it's no coincidence that the attacks on me and our work tend to pinnacle right after we make advances in exposing the Ninth Circle. I mean, so this is a cult that involves top government, military, intelligence people, church people all over the world. Vancouver is a hotspot within Canada and around the world. It's a Pacific Rim outlet for a lot of the organ and human trafficking all through the Pacific region. And this Larry Campbell, the man that I mentioned, I don't know if you can go to the site.
Yes, I can. Hang on, just
give me a moment. There's actually a picture of him.
Yes, absolutely. I'm just going to let me switch to my screen so that I can share my screen and show people. So you said it's on murderbydecree.com.
And you go to ITCS Updates, and okay. That's where we post all our notices. If you go down just below that one, keep going down, you'll see breaking news, Canadian Senator Larry Campbell, if you hit that one. Now, this man is former RCMP officer. He was a chief coroner for Vancouver, mayor, and then appointed to the Senate of Canada by Prime Minister Paul Martin, who himself was named as a participant in what was called Piggy's Palace. It was a snuff film operation. They took one man called Willie Picton and made him the fall guy. He was just on the body disposal crew. His picture is below that if you go down a little bit. There he is. And eyewitnesses, cops, reporters all described that as coroner. He was the one in Vancouver who would, when the early bodies of Aboriginal women began to appear on the streets and that, according to police sources, they were missing organs. And Larry Campbell helped conceal that. He issued fake death records. You know, the coroners are often the ones who play that dirty role. We have, even including a former Canadian Security and Intelligence Service agent who described seeing Larry Campbell, Paul Martin, and others, including the Archbishop Raymond Roos and the Catholic Archbishop, all present where these women were being tortured and killed on film. Now, Larry Campbell is one of the senior senators in Canada. It directly implicates the Liberal government. And Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who admitted a couple of months ago that genocide has occurred in Canada, they finally came around and admitted what we've been proving for over 20 years. He is tied into Chinese cartels operating in British Columbia, including PetroChina. It's the largest oil and gas company in China. The men on the board of directors of that are the very generals involved in organ trafficking in China. And they're in the regions where a lot of Native women go missing. They're found missing organs. I mean, it's this little cabal working together, big money fueling genocide once again. So the Liberal government is in very deep hot water with this. And we thought all the more reason now to use the election as a bigger platform by which we can challenge the government on this. And, you know, it should be interesting.
This is, I mean, absolutely phenomenal. I'm still trying to digest that there was a confirmed double murder with all these people present. I have no words for this. My question is, in all this, I mean, you know, you have already told us that these ritual sacrifices happen. You also told us in what building they happen, or rather the catacombs below the buildings sometimes. Yeah. But my question is, when it's in such a confined area, I mean, even the human sacrifice that you tried to prevent in Rome, when it didn't happen in the Vatican, it was a church 50 meters from the Vatican.
Yeah.
My question is, with all the police forces and counterterrorism forces in the world, how on earth is it not possible to prevent a double murder in such a confined space? I mean, aren't we really talking about the fact that it's not just these people, but the entire local police and the head of the police in Canada, who's also, you know, I mean, it on the local level, basically the local yeah. level, the next level up, and then all the way to the federal level, plus also the entire intelligence agencies. Because to me, it very much sounds like women and children have no rights to life in Canada.
No.
And the intelligence agencies are not there for them. They are yeah. not part
That's
of
right. them. The short answer is that they're implicated, all of them. And for over 30 years, I've worked on the streets of Vancouver. When I first worked, there was a street minister in the 80s. One of the first things you notice is that all the drug dealers were plying their drugs literally right on the front step of the Vancouver Police Department at Main and Hastings Street. And that's because the police are heavily, like in Florida or any major port where there's drugs coming in, the police are all heavily involved in it. That also includes human trafficking. There was a former RCMP Constable, George Brown, who worked in our Missing People's Task Force in downtown Vancouver for many years. George Brown described that all the Mounties know about the murder of Native women by the RCMP. Even Human Rights Watch in New York made a report on this in 2013, saying that the RCMP in Canada are directly involved in the disappearance and murder of Aboriginal women. And that's a fairly mainstream, it's actually run by George Soros with his money. But anyway, even UN agencies are admitting that the RCMP are implicating these deaths. So it's nothing particularly new. As to why it goes on, how, you know, your question about how these two kids could have happened, it isn't a confined space. The reality is it happens all the time. There's a group in Vancouver called the 12 Mile Club, and they operate out of, the Vancouver Club and various churches along that strip on Burrard Street, where all the churches are, where the Wall Center was, where the Anglicans had their convention. It's all along that area, but it's connected to this 12 Mile Club, which refers to the 12 Mile territorial limit. And they literally take women and children and others out beyond the territorial limit, kill them, torture them on boats, and then dump them overboard. And I remember once about over 5 years ago now, I was speaking to a Canadian Coast Guard official, and he talked about how a lot of their money comes from payoffs from the offshore drug importers. A lot of the drugs come through the Indian reservations. The chiefs are all involved. And he joked about how every Friday night the white van would pull up at this dock where they would unload the drugs. And everybody knows about it. It's just part of their business, right, to unload the drugs. Well, they also unload human beings and take human beings away all the time. That's part of the drugs and the arms trade. It's human trafficking too. So it's a whole huge industry. And it's very easy for two children. Now, these two children, we did learn, were probably Aboriginal. And one of the ones who were sacrificed, they were probably from the Squamish Indian Reservation in North Vancouver. It's a big, the Matthias family, they're the Aboriginal leaders there, brought in by the Catholic Church 100 years ago as the puppet chiefs. They provide these children. It's common knowledge on the reservation, right? So it only seems strange if you're not there. When you're in the midst of it, you realize, you know, it's like asking, well, how can drugs be traded? Well, it's all about money. Same with children. And they've got a lot of protection. Our forces are relatively minimal. We use moral and public pressure. Sometimes we have the help of, people who are trained in that way. But the problem is when they themselves come up against the reality that for every honest cop they try to appeal to, there's one next to them who isn't. And they've got a code of silence like judges. They all cooperate. So, I mean, it's that whole dilemma. And until you can get it taken to a higher level, a political level, where you make it very politically embarrassing for these people, it'll keep going on. And that's one of the reasons I'm running in this election, to make all these issues very public.
I basically, my point is, I thank you so much for explaining this in greater detail, because of course you understand this and I have learned about this, but for many viewers who are joining us new, this is absolutely, you know, unfathomable. And I guess what I really would like to bring home to people, number one, I completely agree with you that this is happening all the time. And I would also go as far as it's only, you know, the 12-mile club is only something that they use for rich people, where it would really matter if they were implicated. So it's just a safety measure that takes some bother to arrange. But I am of the, you know, strong opinion that we have human sacrifices and torture and murder of women and children happening in all the communities worldwide all the time. You know, so I really think there's entire satanic towns in the U.S. that are known. You know, there's also thousands and hundreds of thousands of people disappearing every year. And what many people don't realize is that we are surrounded by such a tight surveillance network. It is physically impossible for so many people to disappear unless the police and the intelligence agencies are running it. Basically, right. As similar, you know, and also, for example, the 12-mile club, it is physically impossible for a ship to dock or a ship to leave the shore without surveillance of it continuously. And if they wanted to, they could keep the ship under surveillance from satellite 24/7. They could exactly tell the moment a body is dumped overboard, should they so wish. They could give us a live broadcast. But the reason why they do not, and this is what I really want to emphasize in this, because it ties directly into you running for office, is because everything that we call counterintelligence or intelligence or the military or, you know, the police, they are one big criminal network. And their main job, in my view, is, as you said, drug trafficking, human trafficking, the trafficking of arms and murder, cold-blooded murder and its cover-up. This is horrific. Now, one question about you running. Have you, because another topic, when you are starting to launch a completely new government, you have to finance it. And there's always a time period where you have to get the, you know, the old crime cartels' claws off the money. Do you have any plans of requesting the gold from the global debt facility that I understand is basically available to all the nations in proportion of their population? Are you thinking about financing as well?
Well, don't forget that at this point, we're very much in the formative stages here. We're not going to form the government tomorrow. Even though a majority of Canadians want a republic, they still are thinking in very old terms. Like, for example, there's a republican movement in England, but their whole program is, well, we'll just replace the Queen as head of state. We'll put in a president, and that'll be it. Just change the figurehead. But if you read one of the if you go to that site, Murder by Decree, just bump over one to that article about me running for office, you'll see partway down the page after my statement and everything, there's a thing that says highlights of the program, the Republican Party of Canada. And the whole emphasis is on creating a grassroots democracy. So, for example, one of the things we're saying is not only do we need a Congress that's elected every 2 years and is recallable, but we need local people's assemblies. So, for example, what we emphasize is the right of home rule in a community. People have the right to form their own assemblies, pass their own laws in their own communities, and enact them through common law sheriffs, through citizen militias. And in other words, in order to create a new kind of government, you need a new society. You need people taking responsibility at the grassroots level. And that's really what we emphasize, because no new experiment is going to last unless it has that kind of grassroots foundation. As part of that, we've got people working on different position papers on economic issues and all the stuff you're mentioning, no doubt will be part of that. But it's premature for me to comment on that, because we're floating the idea. In order for this to have a legal standing, there has to be a constitutional convention where a constitution is adopted. But the idea is that we want to create a parallel system of power. So alongside the old system, you're creating a new one. And this happens in any revolution. I remember in Ireland, during the Civil War, there were the Crown Courts, but then the Republican movement there built what were called Brehon law courts. Those were traditional courts based on Gaelic or Brehon law. And they got people to come into the courts, forget about the Crown courts, start using their own. That's exactly, you know, our strategy to start doing that through our common law court system. And it gives people a sense of their own power and hey, I can do this. I don't have to wait some professional politician. We can do it now. And when you start that process, there's a flowering of ideas and alternatives, and all the stuff you're saying will no doubt and already has been debated. One of the points in the program is a republic in Canada would withdraw from all military alliances, from NATO, from the WTO, the IMF, would declare that kind of economic sovereignty as well as political sovereignty. And so everything you're talking about, no doubt, it will be part of that. Why don't you write up a position paper? We'll definitely start circulating.
You know, I am kind of using this platform now that we have this topic up on the table to prime people to think along those lines. And it was basically a kind of a ball I wanted to pitch to you and your movement, because as I understand from Karen Hudis, and many people don't know this, and it goes back to the Vatican loot. So the entire Vatican loot was placed in a trust that expired in 2006, and it has gone over to the World Bank and is now being managed by the board of directors. But as I understand, really, the Vatican, the stolen loot from, I think, before the First World War, is now available and earmarked for the world population, and they are waiting for people to come forward and request it. And this is a big thing, because the current Crown Corporation is offering the people around the world worthless paper currency, fiat currency that is backed by literally just a song and a dance and a lot of child murder and a lot of weapons. But there's no hard backing. And the alternative is a really hard currency. And the reason why it might be so important for Canada is because you do have trade, with the Pacific region. And China and Russia are moving, and the entire Asian sector is moving now to settle trade in gold. And as I understand, it's already happening for big volume trade. And that is so basically you would be ahead of the game, ahead of the race, and you could convert your currency onto a stable footing. Now, as soon as you do that, there will be, a big suction effect, because everybody wants to get onto the hard currency. That's the thing. And this is a way to really get, for example, entrepreneurs onto your site as well, you know.
Well, in that sense, Canada is vastly wealthy. I mean, it was worked out. I remember seeing on Wikipedia a few years ago, if you took the total wealth produced every year in Canada from its vast resources, uranium, oil, water, you divide it equally among all 33 million Canadians, there'd be an average income of about $240,000 each. There's absolutely no reason to have 4 million Canadians in poverty, 1 million children in poverty. I mean, it's obscene. And when you mentioned the Vatican, generally the idea is that the public purse, the wealth of the country, should be owned by the people as a whole, and especially not by foreign interests. So one of the things that we suggest is that, and advocate, is that we need a constitutional provision whereby multinational corporations cannot operate within the economy, that it's got to be managed by the people themselves. And the Vatican is one of the biggest multinational corporations. Mm-hmm. On one of the points in the program, and it's called a secular democracy, we advocate not just the separation of church and state, but an end to tax exemptions for any religious body, no government funding of religious schools, cancellation of diplomatic recognition of the Vatican, the abolition of canon law, right, within the country. That allows these crimes to go on. And the legal and financial disestablishment of any church involved in genocide. And that includes the Catholic Church, the Anglicans, the United Church, and the seizure of their assets, land, and property as reparations for all of those centuries of crime. So the same idea can be applied to any unaccountable big corporate body. They estimate that over half the debt in Canada is because of uncollected taxes owed by the super wealthy, the banks, the corporations. So all you have to do is collect the taxes owed, and there goes the debt, right? But you can't do that within the framework of the Crown, because they're all, every member of parliament, every civil servant, they take a personal oath of loyalty to Queen Elizabeth, not to the people. And that's an act of treason. That's what we, why we say to people, disavow, and we've made this call already to members of parliament to disavow their oath of allegiance to the Queen and take it to a constitution, to the people of Canada. I've, on my program, I've said that I'm going to run on that. If I'm elected, I will have refused to take the oath of allegiance to Elizabeth Windsor. And, you know, begin that process of building up a parallel system of power in Canada.
This is, I absolutely love the idea. I really love the idea. So in addition to, so this one idea I would like to pitch to you early, I want to get this idea through the door early so that people can start thinking about it. So in all honesty, as I understood, Karen Hudis is the signatory for the Global Debt Facility for the United States, but I think she's also on the Board of Governors of the World Bank regarding the gold. And so I think she would be more than happy to hear that you're running for federal office and you're, you know, showing an interest and you would like to, you know, find out more about the Global Debt Facility, because people think it's some sort of joke. It really isn't. But if the people of the nations don't basically grab the gold, somebody else will, you know, some big entities will interface themselves. Now, one other idea I would like to pitch to you as well is that when you form a government, and if you want to really go into things like forbidding multinationals from operating, there's a lot of clauses like that. For example, I think Hungary has a clause whereby you can't own land unless you are actually a national of the country. So in other words, foreigners can't buy up your country, which I think is very good. But also using a very good platform that Catherine Austin Fitz has built, she has uncovered the black budget. You know, it's basically like this. Let's assume you would form, you know, you would become independent, you would form your government, you would get the gold from the Global Debt Facility, you would distribute it over your population. By the way, open brackets, remember that the country debt is a scam. The country debt is a scam. So you don't even have to repay the country debt. It's tabula rasa and you start from fresh. And the way it's going to be accounted is that the interest the Vatican has to pay, I think, for the world is 2 quadrillion or something, because they took the loot and they never paid interest. But everybody who had the gold is owed interest. So the countries actually are owed more than they owe the Vatican. So that can get rid of country debt. But then the next step is, if you distribute the wealth in the country, it is just a natural system effect that the sort of clumping and monopolizing forms again. And one way around that is to just enforce a law that there has to be fully public accounting for, you know, companies above a certain size, you know, such that, and the technology exists, that every government, every large corporation would have fully public accounts that are maybe published with a short time delay of 3 months or 6 months, you name it. But at some point at the end of the year, everybody can look into a company and any big pool of money and actually know where every cent went. Because this way you avoid these big black holes that again will be used to fund genocide. For example, the one that Catherine Austin Fitz discovered in HUD, in the housing you know, budget in the US, where the black hole was, I think, several times the budget, you know, so it was also used for money laundering. But I think if you just put this together, you would have such an astounding program. It would literally just wipe the slate. Yeah. Because, well, you know, even yeah, entrepreneurs would get onto that bandwagon.
We know we have to operate on many levels with this. And there's the official level. My background has always been in community organizing on the ground with people. And what I find is an axiom in this work is that people only will support something new if they think it has a chance of succeeding. Yeah. They've got to see an alternative working on the ground. And the great advantage we have, and why this is a natural progression from my early work in exposing genocide, is under international law, when genocide has been proven and even admitted, like the Prime Minister of Canada admitted 2 months ago, there's an obligation by all member states of the United Nations to then prosecute and punish. That's the expression, prosecute and punish that genocidal nation. That means their assets can be seized under the UN Convention on Transnational Criminal Organizations. The Vatican's wealth can legally be seized by anyone, because they are, in the same way any Catholic priest can be arrested by any citizen, because we suspect them of colluding in a crime, which they are under their policy of criminal solicitanus. They're not allowed to tell the police when children are raped. That's a criminal conspiracy under which they could all be arrested. So the law is on our side. We just have to enforce it. But it's got to be the people themselves who enforce it and not rely on these, you know, bodies that are all accessories to the crime. We have to take that. So, I mean, there's tremendous potential here. And in fact, in the week after I announced this, me running for office, I haven't had this kind of response in years. This people are writing in with great enthusiasm, wanting to volunteer, wanting to help out, but also wanting to, it isn't really about me being elected. It's them electing themselves to that authority and realizing that they have the power to do it themselves. So this is what we want to stir up. I think Samuel Adams in the American Revolution called it lighting brush fires of freedom in the minds of the people. And that's exactly what we're doing.
I absolutely love the plans. You know, I'm just also very cautious because every single time there was a civil revolution, there was a very bloody oppression of it from the Crown Corporation. And my thinking is now the following, because as this momentum is gaining power, what's going to happen very quickly is that organizations like the Five Eyes that Canada is under, which is in my view, a global terrorist organization, they are going to start killing people, threatening people, blackmail people, you know, try to break up the entire movement. And they will continue doing that. They will also continue, you know, recruiting local police officers, local intelligence agencies, and everything. Everybody in Canada who can be mobilized will be mobilized because so much is at stake. Because it's not just, you know, the human trafficking of the people, the tax income. It's also the entire resources in Canada, which you already said numerous. Now, the solution to that, and it goes back, I think it was you who came up with that quote from a film where a guy is kidnapped and is kind of tied to a chair, and he says to the kidnapper, look, you know, how much are you getting paid for this? Because I'll pay you double. And this is pretty much the thinking I'm having, because if you form really a people's movement and get in your claim early that you request the gold from the World Bank, and you get the World Bank, as in the bigger dog, above you as kind of protection with money behind it, you are exactly in the situation of, hey, how much fiat currency are you getting paid for this? Because even if it's 10 million, it ain't worth anything. But here is solid gold that we're paying you with the new Kanata currency. Backed by gold, you know? And as I said, this idea sounds outrageous now, but then again, most people don't know that the BRICS, and especially Russia and China, are moving to that system. This is why the gold from around the world has been going into China, and not an ounce has ever left China, because they need this, you know, to run the economy.
Well, in that sense, you know, one of the things that we've done, we appeal often to the hearts and minds of these officials. And it's worked in the past in these, you know, I've given you in other interviews, I've told you the examples of how police have stood back when we occupy these churches, because we explained to them the reality of what these churches are. And last week, we reissued the stand down order to every agent of the Crown in Canada, members of parliament, judges, civil servants, police, RCMP. They're serving a convicted criminal body. And so they're liable in that sense. And, you know, once we get more exposure in this, we know that'll have a definite effect on their morale. It's an old adage when you look historically, but revolutions happen not only when the people are dissatisfied and want something different, but when the old ruling elites cannot govern anymore. Yep. In Russia, in France, in America, in England, the old ruling class just can't function anymore. They're so demoralized, they're so divided, their morale has collapsed. And so there's a huge power vacuum created. So it's kind of like you got to wait for those moments, that kind of coinciding of all these factors, and know when to strike. Like Sun Tzu says in The Art of War, everything's about timing and acting at the right moment. And I definitely get that sense in Canada that the ruling elites here, their whole history has been that of dependency on the British, on the Americans, now on the Chinese. And, you know, you hear comments of people in power and also on Bay Street, which is like the equivalent in Canada of Wall Street. And it's like they all want to move out of the country. They're all very demoralized. They don't know what to do. There's a lot of confusion at the top. So now is exactly the time to do what we're talking about, to make that, to be offensive and to say, well, we need something fundamentally different now, right?
One thing I can contribute from my work that might just sway sentiment in very powerful circles is that more and more, and this is now, I will just put it out there as my personal working hypothesis, as the one hypothesis that seems to match the data I have collected the best, which is that I'm pretty convinced, but my working hypothesis is that in certain what I call high-risk professions, like police officers, certainly intelligence agents and soldiers, but also judges, journalists, and bankers and politicians, the rate of covert implanting and chipping is probably close to 100%.
Right.
Okay. Now, as soon as you say to these people, look, why don't you buy yourself a $10 UV torch and check if you have an eye implant, you and your children, the more people find these and the more people realize, hang on, my neck is emitting on near mobile phone frequencies, you know, the more people think, hang on a second, this game has gone a bit too far. So far, every single person I talked to about this, they all said, look, this is a step too far. I understand people taking part in crime, but when it's about that, they realize this criminal cartel has invaded their own body and is about to human traffic them, right, or is in the process. That's where most people really want to get out. So I think that is the key insight. It's very, nobody else is putting this out there so far, but I am seeing more and more evidence for this, you know.
I think I'd like you in my think tank. I think I'd like to offer you a position.
The only thing I have to say about think tanks is that no billionaires around is allowed to fund it, and any funding that comes in has to be fully publicly accounted, and then I'm in, you know.
Absolutely.
But I absolutely love the idea, Kevin, and basically tell us the date. So what is the schedule? When can people come support your canvassing? When can they support you in elections and so on?
Immediately. As a matter of fact, I'm running in the constituency of Winnipeg North. Now, Winnipeg is right in the center of the country. It's a prairie town. It's where I grew up. And historically, it's very interesting. It's where a lot of the cultures met. The Scots, the French settlers, they intermarried with the native population and created what are called the Métis, or the mixed blood people. There's over a million of them in Canada. I had a great grandmother who's full Cree Indian. And so Winnipeg is, in a way, a representative of what Canada could be. It's like the idea of equality. In the flag, and if you go down a bit further on the page, you'll see the flag of the Republic. This was adopted when the party was formed in January 15, 2015. Can you see that?
Hang on. Let me just share the screen and go to murderbydecree.com. So just a moment. Okay. People should be able to, so we now, what I see is the highlights of the program. So self-governance, true democracy and justice and freedom, prosperity, economic justice, land security. Very good.
There's the flag. Now, this was adopted after a lot of debate in Winnipeg. We had a founding convention in Winnipeg. And the three stars represent the three founding nations, the English, the French, and the Indigenous. And what's above and below that, these two blue lines, are what's called the two-row wampum treaty. This was signed between the English, the French, and the different Indigenous nations in Eastern Canada in the 1600s. And what the two-row wampum represents is that the two cultures, European and Indigenous, were to go down the river side by side in their own canoes, in their own boats, and not seek to dominate each other. It was a symbol of the Eastern Woodlands Indians, the Mohawk, the Onondaga, the others, were looked reality that way. Things were in harmony and things were equal. You weren't supposed to have domination of one culture over the other. We were to share the land together. So that's really the vision of Kanata. And when we talk about, I talked about why I'm running in Winnipeg. Winnipeg is very much an embodiment of that. You've got a mixture of all the different cultures. And you, in terms of campaigning, what we say to people, like a little while ago, I went to Winnipeg and we convened a neighborhood assembly in North Winnipeg. So it's like a mini parliament. We're saying to the neighbors and everyone, come into this weekly public assembly, start talking about the laws you want in your community and how we can enforce them. Forget about the federal government. We'll do it in our own communities. And that's how I campaign. I campaign by creating alternatives for people on the ground. Because people can agree with ideas in the abstract, but what they get inspired by is a model of something, something that's working. So in terms of my campaign, it started already. I'm not waiting for the writ to drop, because it's going to, the election has to happen either by late August or September sometime, because it legally can't happen after October 21st. So, the liberals are lagging in the polls. The Tories have taken a lead. So they're kind of desperate. They don't know what to do, but I'm not waiting for them. We're going to start the campaign today. If people want to get involved, write to me, thecommonland@gmail.com. And we've got groups operating all over the different territories in Canada. And we definitely could use your help. So,
one question I have, and please forgive me, I'm not trying to be here completely contrary and just, throw the plans overboard. I just have one question and one word of warning, which I would not have said ever, something like 2 or 3 years ago. But since then, I just wisened up. My only worry is that when you have this flag for the Republic of Kanata, the three city state flag, where it's the Vatican, it's Washington, D.C., London, and, it looks stunningly similar. So my question is, while I completely understand the concept, I would wonder, would it be possible to replace the three satanic pentagrams in the middle with maybe something local to Canada? Flower.
That is, the people who came up with that were just ordinary. Some of them were indigenous, some of the others. That obviously never even occurred to them. They didn't even know about it. And the thing about words and images is we can take them back and turn them into something else.
Absolutely.
Red is a symbol of happiness in Asia. Stars, the idea is it's a universal thing. And just because the adversary uses these doesn't mean we can't take them back. And that's what they do all the time with our language.
Yeah.
They twist it for their ends. We can do the same. But I hear you. And now that people know that, there will undoubtedly be a move afoot to change the flag.
Yeah, and also, the other thing is, I honestly, I do not say that to deprecate the movement at all. I'm just saying it as a word of warning, because I can already see the hijacking potential, even de facto, but people claiming, the all-seeing eye was involved all along. What I would also say is that the colors, so I'm just giving you the heads up. This comes from Sean Ross, and it proves that he was right. The colors red, white, and blue basically appear both in the American, the UK, the French flag, and the Dutch flag, and a million other places, because that is going back to the Pharaonic cartel lineage, where the red and the white crown were the Upper and Lower Nile, but I forget which was red and which was white, and the blue was the war crown. So this is why, the American and the British flag look the way they do in the end, and so does the French. They're all one big, and by the way, the Russian as well. So it's one big loving cartel. So what
on the other hand, Catherine, these are also primary colors. Red of the blood, the common blood of humanity. Blue, the sky. It's like with any issue. We can have a fear-based reaction, which is, oh no, they're doing it too, therefore we're going to look like them. Or we can just say, to hell with it all. We adopted this. Judge us by what we do, what we're doing in the real world, not by who we might be associated with, which is a common McCarthyite kind of guilt by association tactic. It's kind of like somebody once said, why does Kevin Anna wear black shirts all the time? He must be a black shirt.
All right.
If I was a black shirt and a Jesuit agent, I wouldn't be wearing a black shirt identifying myself as that, right? Yeah. It's just, we can react with fear, or we can react with, well, so what? It's what we do that matters, right?
Yeah.
I also want to say this is a book we put out. It's got Establishing Liberty. You can get that through Amazon. Just put my name in. This gives a whole vision and program of the Republic. The Case for Kanata, it's called. So you can get that at Amazon.
I absolutely love the idea, and I encourage people to you know, the only thing I'm saying is use this as an opening. What I really love is, for example, you know, the flag with the kiwi on. I absolutely love it because it identifies something that is, you know, indigenous to the country. And I really like flags that have a landscape that is recognizable. And I just encourage people to just go the hell away from these, you know, pentagrams and just,
right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, have three objects that, you know, are typical, you know.
To tell you the truth, the first image we had, one of the versions of the flag that was voted on was, it was an eagle landing on a big tree. And, I mean, that's very Canadian, right, that thing. You know, but again, you say, well, that could be the Roman eagle, right?
I'm talking about the eagle. I think the Mexicans have an eagle that's strangulating the snake. I like that, you know. No, I'm not criticizing. I'm just trying to put it out
there.
Inspire people to come up with fundamentally new symbols, because there are so many. And be proud of your heritage and your local scenery, because that's what people love about Canada. You know, the people.
Well, that's what the Tuer Wampum, that this is very Canadian. This was the first treaty signed. We have the Tuer Wampum flag. I fly it everywhere I go, because it was given to me by some of the Mohawk people who said, we want you to tell the story to your people about the Tuer Wampum Treaty, because we signed it. We're still holding to it, but the Crown nullified it when they brought in the Indian Act and genocide and the residential schools and all this. We're holding to it. So in a way, we're going back to that original understanding between European and settlers and the Indigenous nations. So definitely hold that up. Maybe we'll just get rid of the stars. I don't know.
Just get rid of the stars. You know, I think the rest, I really love the idea. It symbolizes the right thing, but just get rid of the pentagram. I've seen so many satanic pentagrams. I'm getting an allergic reaction to this. But then again, you have three objects to pick, you know, so this could be something to get people's participation in.
This is a work in progress.
Absolutely. But you know what? I think people also love it when there's still something that they can contribute. You know, for example, just to give you an example, Budapest had at some point a big national competition about what the parliament should look like. It wasn't a top-down decision. Well, okay, in the end, they picked top-down the winner. But the top three winners won the first prize, designed the parliament. But prizes number two and three, I think, designed the town hall and I think a concert hall, if I remember it correctly. So, you know, have people design it for you and pick the top three, or maybe the three objects that should
Good idea. We'll have a design the new Republic flag or whatever, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it can be a national pride issue that it comes from your region. I absolutely love it. The last thought I want to put out there is any sort of annulling and putting in a new act. I mean, any act is a form of a contract with the people, okay? And usually money exchanges hands and, you know, trade, and there's a lot of things behind that. But, you know, there's also unconscionable contracts. So if it leads to slavery, there is a process whereby you can just annul whatever annulled what went before, you know? So I just encourage people to just...
Well, that's right. And also don't forget that contracts that are made... involving fraud or non-disclosure of all the facts, they're automatically vitiated. I mean, they don't exist. Yeah. And so that can be applied to so much. And it's kind of like the whole debate about the flag or whatever. It's got to come from, and what we always emphasize is people's own action. There aren't any experts in this. There's people's own experiences. They're their own experts. And there's so much latent goodwill and knowledge out there about the real situation. We want to activate it. So, you know, I often say to people, we're the tip of the spear right now, but you guys hold it. Yeah. And that's our whole philosophy.
Absolutely. I completely agree. And just to explain that there's really nothing malicious against, you know, what I said, I don't want to rubbish the flag. Basically, I've got all other weird issues as well. And I just would like to bring that in as an explanation. For example, the American intelligence media put out the broadcast where they referred to them having a big meeting of the people involved, but they referred it to them having a conclave. Now, I'm not sure about you, Kevin, but I had an immediate allergic reaction. I thought
like Rome.
Yeah, exactly. Once you have a conclave, why don't you just go on and, you know, appoint some cardinals? Once you have it, you know, the rest of the world is trying to get rid of this rubbish, and you guys are charging headlong right into the center, you know? So I'm just weird that way, you know?
No, it's not weird at all.
Yeah, some people are vegan. I'm funny about cartel signaling, you know.
Got it.
But yeah, I absolutely love the idea. So what are your final words to people? You know, what are the next? Oh, by the way, the next date, did I remember it right that the next date to watch out for, the big next event was in September? That was the trial.
That's right. There's a tribunal opening on September 16th in Vancouver. And this is the people that are organizing that have a lot of solid evidence about the links between these top church state business people in Canada and the, especially the Pacific Rim human trafficking and the mass murder of ongoing murder Indigenous people. So that's going to be brought out. And it's going to be happening right during the election campaign. It's perfect. So these things are going to feed into each other. And I would just say to people, don't look at this as just Kevin's running for office. It's an opportunity for all of us to finally confront the source of these crimes and say, we need a new deal. We need a new arrangement altogether. It's not enough to strike at the scales of the dragon. We've got to chop its head off, right? Yeah. And literally, that's what we're aiming to do. So.
Excellent. I also would say that at some point, the people have to reach for the power by some means and through representatives that they have chosen themselves, you know, but at some point, you have to take over the levers, you know, for them to just go away.
I'm glad you said that word, because we don't believe in representatives.
Oh, okay.
We call them delegates, because nobody can represent another. It's like in The Social Contract, Jean-Jacques Rousseau, he said, when you delegate somebody into a position of power, you can withdraw your authority from them at any point. But a representative is like a lawyer. You represent the person. You're casting the person in a new light according to your agenda. And nobody can represent another. You can't hand over your sovereignty to another. You retain that sovereignty. So so for example, there'll be delegates to Congress or to local assemblies. But those delegates are under strict orders. When you vote for somebody, you say, you have to do X, Y, and Z. And if you don't do that, you're recallable. We'll remove you right away. So it's a very different idea than handing over your power to somebody who rules over you for 5 years. By that criteria, it's only when you mark a ballot that you're in a moment of freedom, and then you go back to slavery again. Well, the whole idea is to return power on a permanent basis to people. And that's why we use the word delegate. But again, I'm not wanting
this
to...
It's a big deal, actually. No,
I mean, this very is important, a pretty big deal. Idea, right?
You know. Yeah, this is a pretty big quote, and I'm really grateful that you brought that nuance out, because it wasn't even in my mind that there's a difference. But now that you mention it, the U.S. people electing their representatives and then being thoroughly screwed over by them, now we know why, because there's no mechanism to recall them when they don't stick to their election promises. Yep. So this is a pretty big difference. Thank you so much for actually pointing it out. So delegates, yes, you know. And by the way, when a government sends people, they don't want to hand over power, so they do send delegates, right? They don't send representatives, so exactly. We know what they're doing. Yeah. Excellent. So what are your final words to our viewers, Kevin?
Well, if you're in Canada, contact thecommonland@gmail.com. You can be part of my campaign. But I'm not going to constrict my activity to just the constituency of Winnipeg North. I'm campaigning right across the country, because don't forget, we don't support any agency under Crown authority. So I'm not going to register as an official candidate. We're going to set up our own kind of alternative balloting system, where by voting, you're actually casting a vote for the Republic. You're not acknowledging Crown systems of authority or voting or anything. So we're creating that new process as we do it. So again, very exciting. People in Canada, get involved. Outside Canada, just continue to support the work we're doing. Murderbydecree.com. There's a way to donate there. It costs money to do all this stuff. And on Sundays every Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern time, bbsradio.com/whowestand. I'll be doing regular reports, having activists on the ground talking about the work. That's every Sunday. So get the word out. And thank you, Catherine, once again for helping us do that.
This is wonderful. So I really say, okay, it's now on to you guys to get going. If you're in Canada, I do think you have a duty to act one way or another. You have to do something. You're obliged by international law and certainly by, you know, moral and ethical standards to get these serial killers out of your country and get them under control. Nobody's going to do it for you. Now, if you are outside of Canada, like I am, I think it's all incumbent on us to support this endeavor by spreading the news and also watching this as an attempt by a people to regain their power from the most murderous, you know, psychopathic system that has been with us for thousands and thousands of years. And, you know, we should just support it and watch the experiment and see what we can improve, what went wrong, what went really well, what can we adopt, what to improve upon. And I just encourage everybody, please get the gold from the World Bank as quickly as possible because they want to crush our economies. So that's what I want to say.
And I would say also, if you're in any Commonwealth country, you can start and should start the same process. There's people in England, in Australia, in New Zealand who want to do the same process there. And so use us as a model of what you can do to say no to the crown anywhere in the world, right? And their Vatican backers.
Absolutely. Yeah. Especially in Switzerland, right? Right. We have Jesuit, 2 meter Jesuit crosses everywhere, you know. But thank you so much, Kevin. I'm looking forward to hearing more, you know, throughout the preparations and throughout your candidacy and also throughout what's happening in September through these tribunals, because they are, I think, the most important next step in Canada. Thank you very much for coming on the show. And also thank you to my viewers. So this is us. So bye for now. And you will hear from us hopefully very, very soon. Bye for now.